Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
I'm Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, we want to get into deep fat frying.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we did not talk about, we started talking about animal fats. We didn't talk about where they came from. I don't say from the animals, okay? Dr. Doolittle.
Mm-hmm.
So where do the animal fats, like that jar of duck fat or that jar of chicken fat, where would that have come from? Why would you have that? Let's say you buy a Magre duck breast. You have to render that fat,
right,
the fatty side of the breast anyway. You want to get rid of, you're going to melt off about half that fat in a heavy, slow pan.
Right.
Maybe even a little bit more than that. What do you do with the fat that's in that pan?
All you have to do is let it cool down a little bit and then pass it through a fine strainer. And then you have that to use for your own purposes, which is perfect. Even if you go right into the refrigerator, well, once it's cooled down, you go into the refrigerator with it. A lot of the bits and pieces will fall to the bottom of whatever you've stored it in. And you can just not either choose to use that or not to. But oftentimes that will have some really good flavor because it's actually rendered meat juices as well. So you're kind of all the way around good there. Magre is the best way to get good fat to work with because there is so much extra fat on the outside.
You just have to cook it at low enough temperature that...
Yeah, you have to cook it very gently.
The fat keeps its integrity, and that takes time.
And you also score, so you do little hash marks on the outside of the breast on the fat side, and that allows the fat to render out better. And,
when you say render out, it literally melts out of the...
It does.
The fatty part of the breast.
And you should be, this is the perfect use for your steel pan and, as you say, on very low heat. And just gently, gently, gently do it, and then you're going to have this gorgeous fat to work with.
All right. Let's get into deep fat frying. Why do you think people are scared of deep fat frying? Or, that's not as a cook, but, literally as a consumer, why do you think that they're scared of?
Well, they think it's unhealthy, I suppose.
Because they see you immersing the product in the fat.
Right. But in the end, if you know how to fry, it doesn't absorb that much fat. It just absorbs enough to cook the food. And, you should obviously be draining it. So then that there's really little fat absorbed.
Because it just sears the outside of the... Let's just say it's a piece of catfish or something.
Mm-hmm.
If you're giving a little bit of a batter or something like that, it's searing on the outside of it to begin with.
Right.
It's not even penetrating.
Exactly. It's not like that fish is full of fat.
No.
It's just whatever. Well, and the less breading you have, the less absorption of fat you're going to have. So if you do a light breading procedure, there's not going to be a chance for there to be much fat absorption.
So the fish that's inside of there, actually it just steams.
Exactly. And that's why you like
it
so much.
Inside of that seared
mm-hmm.
exterior.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a good way of putting it. It's like it's encased in something and it's completely protected. And that's in the end, it becomes almost a moist way of cooking something.
Yeah.
It doesn't almost. It is a moist way of cooking something. And therefore, that's another reason why you like fried food so much, if it's not overcooked. And that's the whole thing. If you get a piece of fried chicken, which is a pretty big piece of meat. If you have a decent sized breast where you leave the bone in the legs or the thighs, that takes a while to fry. And, you can, if we fry something like a chicken breast, we actually do it in two drops. In other words, we drop it, maybe cook it for like 3 minutes, and then we bring it back up and allow it to rest. And, to sort of let it carry over on its own for a little while, that carryover cooking, and then drop
let
it again.
Let the temperature kind of penetrate towards the interior a mm-hmm. little bit and let that crust set on the outside.
Right, and that's how you don't end up with super dark chicken. Also, your oil has to be fresh, not used oil. But and that at home, that's what I assume it would be. You would be working with absolutely fresh oil, which is great. And... I think that's the whole thing. Any kind of breading procedure has to be a light batter or a light amount of flour. And that's the whole thing. If you're doing something like beignets...
We talked about fear. Let's say people love beignets.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to deep fry at home, what is the best way to set up to deep fry beignets at home?
Mm-hmm. You make your batter first, and you need to let it rest a little bit before you use it. And beignet batter is, you know, what we would do is sparkling water, a little bit of baking powder, a little bit of baking soda.
It's just a little bit of sparkling water.
Right. And we use cake flour, which is a lighter flour. And so all the way around, you have a lighter batter. And
less protein, less gluten. It ends up giving you a tender something instead of a stiff something, right?
Right. And you have your batter ready to go, and your food is prepped, whether it's a shrimp beignet or a calamari beignet, or you want to put vegetables in that batter.
But what do you put it in? How big of a vessel do you need? Let's say you have, you know, finger-sized pieces of vegetables that you're doing as beignets. You want to do a bunch of crispy vegetables, and you made a nice aioli or something with herbs for an hors d'oeuvre. How big of a vessel, if you have finger-sized vegetables, do you need of fat?
I would probably have a half gallon for home of batter. So, you know, I would put it in a bowl, a big bowl, so that you have plenty of room to work, because you are going to want to be able to work and dip your product in and move it around and make sure it is coated.
The batter itself. But the fat needs to go into
a good-sized pot. Yes, and you do need a good-sized pot.
And how much fat do you think you need for
probably
that kind of product? If you're frying, say, a dozen pieces at a time.
2 gallons. I would say 2 gallons. And that's
the thing. People get freaked out about.
Agree.
You go and you buy
all this oil.
You buy 2 gallons of corn oil or 2 gallons of peanut oil.
It is pretty strange, because I've had to do it at home too. And of course, I don't bring the oil from, you know, the restaurant. I go to the grocery store and buy it.
You know, one of the 75 pound things of peanut oil.
I don't bring that home.
I can see you pulling it out of your trunk. A couple of bodies or something.
Right. I'm in there buying, you know, 6 bottles of corn oil. I'm like, this is ridiculous. So it is kind of weird to fry at home. I agree with that. Well, then you want to talk about stories. When you and I were still married, we were living out on Western Run Road on a beautiful farm.
Oh, this is a long time ago.
Oh, yes. And my parents came, and my mom and dad are from York, Pennsylvania, and they love fried oysters. And I made fried oysters for them at the house. And I think that's one of the first times that I fried oysters at home. And I did it only because of my parents, because I loved them so much.
And afterwards, you had a nice big vat of oil.
I had a big container of oil. I'm in the middle of the country on a 60-acre horse farm, and I'm thinking, no problem. I'll just put that pot out back. I'm not dealing with that tonight. You know, you're entertaining. You've got family there. You don't want to deal with that. I put it out the back
door. There are
no
bears. Yeah.
There are no bears. Well, apparently there's a dog living next door, 2 of them. Our neighbors had Vimaramers, if that's how you say it. Is that how you say it? Tony's reaction is always like, Well, how do you call them? What do you call them?
Weimaraner.
Okay, that. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I didn't say it. I didn't say it with a German accent. Excuse me. So next day, I get up, and I'm making breakfast for everybody, and there is not a drop of oil in that pot. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
That's because
what happened to the oil?
That's because the deep fat fairy came and took it.
Yeah, uh-huh. 2 dogs came and licked it out of that pot, and I called the lady that owned the property.
Robin, yeah.
Robin. And I said, oh my gosh, Robin, I don't know what happened, but I can only imagine. And she was like, yeah, my dogs are, you know, having a problem right now. I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't ever do that. And it's not safe anywhere. So what you do is you cool it down somewhere in your house, probably in your basement, and away from any pets that you might have.
Because the deep fat fairy is not coming to take your fat away.
It is not, unfortunately. Yeah. I wish there was a deep fat fairy. And I save the bottles, obviously, and the lids, and then I just strain it back into the bottles. And you're going to have a little extra or a little less, depending on how much frying you did, and it should work out okay.
Yeah,
so that's what I do. I just pour it back into the bottles.
People get a little bit freaked out, I think, because the thought of you went and you bought those 6 bottles of corn oil or something, and you fried it, and you're like, what do I do? How do I keep this?
Right.
I
wouldn't use it again anyway, so get rid
of it. I mean, it's like, tomorrow I'm having another party the same size.
Right.
And I'm going to do the same thing.
Yeah, of course you're not. So
a certain commitment.
Well, right, and that's
and
an
probably
expense
to deep fat frying.
Exactly. And then you have to clean the pot. And quite frankly, when you fry in your house, it makes a mess of your kitchen. It gets on your walls. It gets everywhere. It just flies through the air.
If you don't ventilate well, your room will smell like fried catfish.
Yeah, it's awful. And so it's really just no fun to fry at home, I have to say. Even when we used to have a little tabletop.
Teaching people how to deep fry at home, making them very motivated to do that.
Just don't fry at home. Go eat it out somewhere.
Just drink the glass of champagne you should be having with the beignets and talk about beignets.
But don't actually make them. Yeah. Well, and the other thing is that we used to have one of those.
Because the whole house is going to smell and make a mess.
Yeah. It went to your house, but you have the little tabletop fryer that we used to have.
Yeah.
And that, you know, at least that makes it easier. But that thing wasn't easy to clean either. No. I'd almost rather be in a pot. It's
I don't think it's that hard going into a pot, and I do tend to, I will strain and seal and use that oil again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's within a month or something like that. I mean,
I won't, but that's fine if you do that.
Oh, I have some charity dinners coming up this summer that I have to do. That, yeah,
we'll just get you a 35-pounder from the restaurant.
Yeah, boy.
There you go.
Let's get serious about one last important fatty topic. You mentioned biscuits, and biscuits sort of bake pastry. The places where, and when I talked about making a pot pie, and that means making a pastry crust, the basic process of cutting fat into pastry or into a biscuit, you want to talk about how you end up with a texture so the biscuit's not like a piece of lead.
Right.
Or that the pastry crust is not tough.
Yeah.
Because those are things that people struggle with, because I think they try to work the bejesus out of things, right?
And that's the whole problem. You don't want to work the glutens. You're not making bread. If you're making bread, you'd want to work the gluten. You're making pastry. You want it to be light and delicate.
Quality butter and the type of flour, right?
Right. So.
Or quality fat and type of flour.
Yeah. I think, you know, when you're making pie dough, you can use all-purpose flour. And obviously, you're going to cut butter into it. And one of the things I like about the description of making pie dough or making biscuits, particularly making biscuits, is that when you're cutting in the butter into the flour, it should look like cornmeal eventually. And I love that because that's what everybody can kind of envision that. And that is what happens when you make biscuits in particular. And one of the things I taught my AM prep guy when I first taught him how to make our biscuits, which we used to serve, at one of our restaurants.
You're going to just get requests now.
Oh, boy. was that it had to be quick. You know, a Baldo. You put it in the pot. You put it in the mixer. And once you add the buttermilk, it's got to be quick, on high speed. Get it done. Get it out. And it's handled very delicately. And when you make biscuits, you have baking powder in there anyway. And one of the things about baking powder is baking powder turns into feeling like salt in your mouth, on your palate. And a lot of people, or not a lot of people, might think, oh my gosh, there's too much salt in this, and it's actually the baking powder. And that's one of the issues you can also have when you make beignet batter, is that you have to be very careful with the amount of baking powder you put in anything that you make. But getting back to cutting the fat in, I mean, a biscuit is the perfect place to put chicken fat or pork fat or duck fat into a biscuit. But I mean, obviously, if you're going to the range of putting duck fat into a biscuit, you better be serving that with a piece of foie gras, or serving it with a piece of pork, or serving it with a piece of duck.
Serving
because that's
breakfast
serious.
With duck bacon and really good eggs.
Right, yeah. Right. You know, use chicken fat. That's more breakfasty to me, or lighter, obviously, in flavor and profile.
I know just in watching my great-grandmother, she would always go about half and half with the animal fat and butter on those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that makes sense because
to get a little more predictable result, I think, is kind of what she was after.
And when you do go to make that pie dough or tart dough, again, you just want to work it enough where it comes together. Once it comes together, that's when you're done. And you can do that really, I mean, you can make pie dough with your hands and with a fork and
people,
a knife.
I think, they sometimes think that they're making bread, you know, where they have to, like, that dough and knead it and stuff.
Let's
and that's
see.
The stuff that makes it tough.
Right. And you want it, as my mother would say, you want it to be tender. And it's the same thing. When she makes pot pie, she makes it the Pennsylvania Dutch way, which is she makes her dough, she rolls it out, and she cuts it with a pie cutter, actually. So it's squares of dough. It's rolled out. It almost looks like pasta. So it's squares of dough. And oh my gosh, is that one of the best things? I could eat that right now thinking about it. But that is, you know, I remember when probably 20 years ago she taught me how to make it when I had started cooking. And then recently I asked her to show me to make it again because it had been so long. And she, of course, she doesn't have a recipe. She makes it just like my grandmother did, which is, oh, put a little water in and then
she knows what goes in it.
Put an egg in.
Yep.
Exactly. And I'm like, wow. You know, and that's, of course, that's how I.
Yeah, my great-grandmother, there was nothing ever written down.
Right.
She just made things that were good.
Yep. Thank goodness.
Honestly, one thing that will settle people down for, we're talking about cutting fat into flour for any kind of pastry, get a pastry cutter. Yes. It looks sort of like a baker's kung fu tool.
Mm-hmm.
Has a handle to it and a bunch of sort of what look like knives coming out of it.
Those are pretty great.
And they're terrific. Well, and you can contact us at foremanwolf@wypr.org if you have questions about any of the topics on the program, if you have recipes you want to share or recipes that you want clarified. You can also find this or any other Foreman Wolf on food and wine programs at the WYPR website, WYPR.org. Just go to the Foreman Wolf homepage. Anyway, I think that's about all we have time for. It's all the fat that we can make you handle today, I think. On Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine, I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Thanks for listening on WYPR.